J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI, says that the Communist Party have been, still are, and always will be a menace to freedom, to democratic ideals, to the worship of God, and to America's way of life. Persons who've joined the Communist Party verify these things that are said about them. They take an oath to support the Leninist line of the party because that's the only line that assures the triumph of Soviet Russia over the United States. On the basis of these findings, along with the established records of hundreds of American citizens who have deserted this country to adopt a misguided sense of disloyalty to the United States and an abortive sense of devotion to Soviet Russia, I personally have become convinced that communism and all it stands for must be opposed firmly and absolutely, all the way, in all the places, by all the American people. It makes little difference whether an American citizen holds a membership card in the Communist Party or whether an American citizen simply devotes time, energy, and money to furthering the cause of communism. The result's the same, namely, an aid in hand of Soviet Russia and consequently an enhancement of the chances of Russia realizing its objectives to dominate the USA. I'd like briefly to call to your attention a statement made by J. Edgar Hoover on April 27, 1951, before our Congress, just 3 days ago, ladies and gentlemen. He says the Communist Party, reduced to 43,000 fanatics, has prepared an underground apparatus more dangerous to the security of the United States than any subversive organization in American history. He goes on to say that the subversive activities of the Communist Party today far exceed in seriousness any Nazi fifth column that we had in the country during the last World War. He says it represents a more compact, a more determined, and a more dangerous group of 43,000 odd members than when it had 54,000. For every member, there are 10 sympathizers. Ten sympathizers, making a total of 430,000 people in the United States who seek to overthrow this government or are willing and anxious to accept the communist doctrine over our doctrine. There's one bill that, one thing this bill does, it permits the educators of the state of Illinois to discharge members of their staff who belong to communist front organizations. Dean Spaulding has told the chairman of the 48th Loyalty Commission that he couldn't discharge a certain university professor who belongs to some 11 communist front organizations because this law didn't exist. Ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to give it to him. Thank you very much.
Speaker for the negative will be Professor Will Burnett, College of Education. Mr.
Chairman, members of the opposition, ladies and gentlemen, I want first of all to offer my personal thanks to Mr. Hodges and to Senators Doyle and Young for their courtesy in providing the opportunity for the citizens of this community to hear the alleged merits and alleged demerits of this bill. And as the challenged person, I want also to now indicate my thanks to Senator Gray and to Dean Spaulding. I want further to correct a possible misinterpretation, which seems to be rather consistently made by at least Mr. Hodges. I have indicated repeatedly that I do not impugn the motives of those who are sponsors of or supporters of this bill or any other sort of comparable legislation. Despite the fact that I have made it quite clear that I fully accept their sincerity while denying the validity of their viewpoint, it has been repeatedly indicated that apparently Mr. Meyerding was afraid to come out and debate on this bill. May I, for the last time, I hope, point out that I never gave Mr. Meyerding a chance either to accept or decline. And may I state finally, and I'll get on with my arguments on this bill, that I do find such remarks as that Mr. Broyles is a nobody who will never be anybody highly distasteful and inappropriate. Now, I want to indicate quite clearly that there is no point of issue between these two teams in our conception of the danger of Russian imperialism and in communism. The point of issue is whether or not this specific legislation, Senate Bill 102, is needed. Secondly, whether or not this specific bill 102 is going to do the job it purports to do, that is to stamp out or at least materially decrease subversion. And third, what total consequences would be the probable result of this bill if enacted into law. The total consequences is an important matter. While fighting communism, both abroad and at home, we must be very certain that we do continue to advance the security and development of this country, which has been based upon freedom. I too want to quote from J. Edgar Hoover, and I quote from a report in the New York Times of February 28th of this year, regarding really this total responsibility we citizens must be aware of as we consider any legislation in terms of its soundness or its possible harm. Hoover said, "The protection of the nation's internal security is a twofold responsibility. It must encompass not only the safeguarding of the nation's secret and vital areas, but also guarantee the civil liberties of the citizen himself will not be violated." Now, I'm confident that all of us in this room, including the proponents of this bill, are agreed on that fundamental principle. Where we disagree is in the total range of consequences which will flow from this bill. I'd like, before we look at this bill in any more detail than we have already, to bring to your attention, through just two brief quotes, some aspects of the American tradition and the way in which Americans have combated false ideologies in the past. The first is a quotation from Thomas Jefferson. "Truth is the proper and sufficient antagonist to error, and has nothing to fear from the conflict, unless by human interposition disarmed of her natural weapons, free argument and debate." The second is a rather recent decision by, Justices Brandeis and Holmes, several years back, obviously. They stated the same important truth as follows. "To courageous, self-reliant men, with confidence in the power of free and fearless reasoning applied through the processes of popular government, no danger flowing from speech can be deemed clear and present unless the incidence of the evil apprehended is so imminent that it may befall before there is opportunity for full discussion. If there be time to expose through discussion the falsehood and fallacy, to avert the evil by the processes of education, the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced silence." End of this quotation. Now, I indicate that quotation for, among other reasons, this. Senator Broyles has indicated that the Communist Party has been underground, almost, if not entirely, from the beginning. Obviously, in a certain sense, he is correct. They will go to any length, presumably, that need be, but at the same time, let me indicate from another quotation from Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, his viewpoint of the recency in any legal sense of the movement underground, which has occurred after the attempt in the McCarran Act to move against the communists. You recall, I think, that Mr. Hoover offered his viewpoints regarding the danger of causing the communists to move underground by declaring the party illegal in this country. This quotation is from March 4th, 1951, New York Times. And Mr. Hoover said, the communists in this country have moved their activities underground within the last few months, to the greatest degree yet. He says further, and I quote again, this agency, however, knows pretty much just what they are doing. Now, is there need for this legislation? I wonder if you all are aware of the fact that we have a number of bills in this state designed to prevent not only subversive acts, but the utterances of subversive viewpoints, the teaching or advocating of overthrow by force or violence. If you would check in the criminal code of this state, Illinois Revised Statutes, Chapter 38, Section 558, Article 265A, you will find the following, and I quote, it shall be unlawful for any person to advocate by word of mouth or writing the reformation or overthrow by violence or any other unlawful means of the representative form of government now secured to the citizens of the United States and the several states by the Constitution of the United States and of the several states. Now, this has been the law of this state since 1919. Is it not clear enough? Additional sections of this law prohibit the publication, the issuance, or distribution of any written or any printed matter so advocated. Make it unlawful for any person to be a member of any association, the object of which is to overthrow the existing form of government by violence. And make it unlawful to attend meetings or to allow the use of one's premises for any meeting where such overthrow of government by force or violence is advocated when one has knowledge of the nature of the meeting as so described. And incidentally, this law has rather big teeth in it. It provides that such advocacy by word or writing, or the distribution of such materials so advocating, or the joining of such organizations as are advocating, are a felony, the highest category of crime, carrying penitentiary penalties of from 1 to 10 years imprisonment. In addition, the Smith Act of 1940, a federal law, as you know, makes the advocacy of the overthrow of the government by force or violence a crime and applies strong penalties. Now, the opposition has, I think, inadvertently or otherwise, made it appear that the substance of this is primarily the taking of an oath. This is not true. I have no objection to the positive oath. I have taken an oath in this state at the University of Illinois. I have no objection to this. I do have objections to the permissive legislation that this is, which provides not a specific statement throughout of the precise oath or affidavit which must be signed, but which allows for any employing officer or board in the state to determine the nature of the affidavit. Let me indicate some portions of this bill in a little more detail. First, as Dean Spaulding has indicated, the bill authorizes the appointment of a special assistant attorney general in charge of subversive activities. I want to emphasize one of the duties which is spelled out in this bill, that he maintain, and I quote, complete records of all information received by him and all matters handled by him under the requirements of the Act. Now, it is again true that he is charged with the responsibility of not divulging this record until the request of the Attorney General. Section 9 provides, however, that the judge of any court exercising general criminal jurisdiction, when in his discretion it seems appropriate, or when informed of the state's attorney that there is information or evidence of subversion, shall charge the grand jury to inquire into violations of the Act for the purpose of proper action, etc. Section 11 provides that employing officers or board shall establish by rules, regulations, or otherwise procedures designed to ascertain before any person, including teachers or other employers, of any public educational institution where state is employed or employed, that he is not a subversive person and that there are no reasonable grounds to believe that he is a subversive person. Now, Mr. Hodges has declared that in his judgment this is a perfectly safe and reasonable thing. There is an implication in his statement that this is the American way. If it appears, on what evidence one can gather, that there are reasonable grounds to assume that a person is subversive, that he should be not allowed employment.